Irma Bombeck was one of America's most well-known humorists from the 1970s through much of the 90s. Her books poked fun at the suburbs and families, her own failed attempts to be cool or trendy, and motherhood, always motherhood. She wrote, "The grass is always greener over the septic tank, and if life is a bowl of cherries, what am I doing in the pits?" She made people laugh, and at times she made them cry. This is a piece she wrote for the Dayton Journal Herald called When God Created Mothers. When the good Lord was creating mothers, he was into his sixth day of overtime. And an angel appeared and said, "Man, you're doing a lot of fiddling around on this one." And God said, "Have you read the specs on this order? She has to be completely washable, but not plastic. Have 180 movable parts, all replaceable. Run on black coffee and leftovers. Have a lap that disappears when she stands up, a kiss that can cure anything from a broken leg to a disappointed love affair. Oh, and 6 pairs of hands." The angel shook her head slowly and said, "6 pairs of hands? No way." "It's not the hands," God remarked. "It's the 3 pairs of eyes that mothers have to have." "That's on the standard model," the angel said. God nodded. "One pair that sees through closed doors when she asks, 'What are you kids doing in there?' even though she already knows. Another one in the back of her head to see what she shouldn't but has to. And of course the ones here in front that can look at a child when it goofs up and say, 'I understand and I love you,' without ever uttering a word." God, the angel said, "Get some rest tomorrow." "I can't," said God. "I'm so close to creating something, so close to myself. Already I have one that heals herself when she's sick, can feed a family of 6 on 1 pound of hamburger, and can even get a 9-year-old to stand in the shower." The angel circled the model of the mother very softly, slowly. "It's too soft," she said. "But tough," said God. "You can imagine what this mother can do or endure. Can it think? It can think, reason, and compromise." Finally, the angel bent over and ran her finger across the cheek. "There's a leak," she said. "I told you were trying to put too much into this model." "It's not a leak," said the Lord. "It's a tear." "Well, what's it for?" "It's for joy, sadness, disappointment, pain, loneliness, pride." "Wow, you're a genius," said the angel. God shook his head and said, "I didn't put it there. She did." Mother's Day is to celebrate mothers and moms and mamas, those of all genders and shapes and sizes. Last year I talked about mothers and others, the people who loved us into being, and I explored what it meant to call yourself a mother. This year I want to talk about something a little different, mothering as relationship. Mothers bring new life into being, not only through their bodies, but through their hearts and minds, and it is an ongoing process. Of course, in her book, The Lunchbox Chronicles, writer Marion Winnick says it well when she says, "For me, parenting is like dieting. Every day I wake up filled with resolve and good intentions, perfection in view, and every day I somehow stray from the path. And the difference with dieting is that usually I can make it until lunch." Some mothers cry for joy, others for sadness, some because they love what they have brought into being, others because they wish they knew what that kind of love was like. Whether we are the parent or the child, the creator or the creation, related by blood or love or circumstances, mothering is the interplay between two forces, and it's amazing how strong that interplay can be. Now, some of you may know this story. August 16, 1996 was a really hot day. The Brookfield Zoo in Brookfield, Illinois, the crowds were heavy. And over at the gorilla enclosure, parents and kids lined the wall and pointed down at the gorillas about 18 feet below them. One mom wasn't paying a lot of attention. No one ever found out why. There's no record of what their name was. Her son walked away from her and ducked through the fence that bordered that gorilla enclosure and climbed the wall. He fell 18 feet to the concrete below. What happened next was remarkable. An 8-year-old female Western lowland gorilla named Binti Wa was part of the band in the enclosure, and she watched that little boy land hard. He was knocked unconscious by the fall, his hands broken, his face cut and bleeding. And Binti was a mother herself. Her own 17-month-old baby, Kula, was hanging on her back. So her child was developmentally at about the same age as this little 3-year-old that fell. People started screaming and then shrieking when the gorilla walked toward this little boy, especially when she growled at another female gorilla who was trying to get between her and the child. One of the paramedics who was there that day said it was sickening, and he started to record with his camera because he was so afraid of what was about to happen. Videos are on YouTube. You can still see them. But Binti, with little Kula still hanging on to her, picked up this little boy, held him on her lap, and rocked him, cuddled him for a minute. When she realized he wasn't getting up, she kept all the other gorillas at bay and walked with this baby toddler as best she could over to the den door, where she waited for the keepers to come and get him. And then she handed him over and walked away. The little boy was fine after treatment. His embarrassed and frightened parents would never allow his name to release. We still don't know who he was. We do know that he was fine eventually. But here's the thing. For every mom on the planet, sometimes you're the gorilla. And sometimes you're the mom who looks the other way while your kid falls in the gorilla pit. Mothering is not exclusive, it's not proprietary, it's relational, situational. Good mothering and bad mothering by the book or by the skin of your teeth. Mothers are people, people who do that job well, and people who do it, well, less well. Binti proved to be an exceptional mother to little Kula, eventually a lovely grandmother to Akula's babies. She was great at leaf eating and cuddling and not chasing the babies around the cage with a stick. And yet no human on earth would trust her to babysit for 90 seconds. Little boy who fell in, no one ever learned who he was. His parents weren't charged with anything. His mother has never had another problem that anyone has ever heard of. She may have turned out to be Room Mother of the Year over and over again. Almost nobody wakes up and thinks, how can I destroy my kid today? How do I make their life miserable? Now, I say this with a codicil that my partner's son and grandson and my own foster son and my foster daughter would disagree with you on this one. They would tell you that I woke up that way every morning. It's a lie. Mothering is about being present or absent, friendly or cold. Raising a child, being present with that child, or being the one who occasionally wonders, whatever happened to that kid you had? What works for one mother and child is a disaster for the next, and anyone who writes a book that guarantees you that reading it and doing the things in it will make you a great mother is either totally delusional or they want to sell you something. I've always loved Khalil Gibran and his prose poem, The Prophet. I use it frequently. And in his section on children, he says very specifically, your children are not your children. They're the sons and daughters of life longing for itself. They come through you, but not from you. And they're with you, but they don't belong to you. You can give them your love, but not your thoughts, because they have their own thoughts. You can house their bodies, but not their souls. Their souls dwell in the house of tomorrow where you can't visit, not even in your dreams. You can try to be like them, but don't try to make them like you. Life doesn't go backward. It doesn't tarry with yesterday. You are the bows from which your children, as living arrows, are shot forth. The archer sees the mark on the path of the infinite and bends you with his might, and the arrows go swift and far. Let your bending be with gladness. For even as the Creator loves the arrow that flies, he also loves the bow that's stable. What an incredible metaphor for mothering and relation. Mothers create another person through their presence and their absence, their words and their actions. They don't own that material. It's not copyrighted. They can model ways of being in the world or let their lack of modeling speak for them. But they can't control their child's ways of being in the world. Mothers can't be upgraded. But children are not usually backwards compatible. And that isn't necessarily a bad thing. If mothering is relational, though, this implies that it's designed to change and to develop over time. And that kind of change can be difficult. I found when I deal with people from my childhood and my young adulthood, we all revert to type when we're together, and some of you may have experienced this. At the class reunion, the class clown who went on to become a brilliant surgeon comes in with a cow mask on his face that he got suspended for in sophomore year. Band kids who haven't touched an instrument in 25 years are talking about band camp. Somebody finds their old French horn and drags it out. One of my dear friends who's doing cutting-edge research in molecular biology will drag out his Dungeons and Dragons dice and start arguing about characters that none of us have talked about in 25 years. While the lawyer demonstrates how to leap hurdles like he did as a senior. None of us have seen each other in years. We know the images we remember from yearbooks or encapsulated memories that have gotten a little worn around the edges. The relationships that we hold with one another are what we remember. This is Jack. This is how he is. And this is how I am with Jack. It's easy to let the same thing happen with the people who mother us. For all those mothers who remain in active relation to us, changing and growing, recognizing our growth as well, we honor and recognize them. We also honor and recognize the others, the mothers who make us feel as if we are still 13 just by calling us on the phone. My own mother is great at this. In fact, she called me just before Easter to make sure I had decorated the church in all the right liturgical colors, had undraped the cross and set up the communion set correctly. And I assured her I wouldn't screw it up. When I think about it, it's easy to see why mothering gets harder as we grow. For the last 28 years, my mother has known me through phone calls and visits, but not daily activity. And when she treats me as if I were still 13, I respond at times like that twit of a preteen. Treating her as if she were still that twit of an early 40-year-old. How can I expect her to be fully present with the person I am now? The adult I became in the 28 years since I had last lived at home. If I don't remember to share my growth and change with her. Without that knowledge, she is stuck being somebody at my class reunion, defaulting to type and reacting to a ghost of a person. It's an easy thing to do. If you relate to a mother if I relate to my mother as if she is as she was, what are we missing? What am I missing? What ghost am I interacting with? Interactions within our families, interactions with those who mother us can still hurt 20 or 30 or 60 years later. They can still heal. Whether mom is the gorilla or the one who dropped us into the gorilla's enclosure or the one who picked us up afterwards, the angel or the demon or the ghost who was never there, something in between, she wasn't perfect. She just was part of an archetypal relationship common in every age. All of our paths are different, but human children all come from somewhere, and while families vary wildly, the challenge of being a part of a family are everywhere. Jack Kornfield, in his book, After the Ecstasy, The Laundry, tells the story of a woman married to a popular Hindu teacher. The woman comments, "My husband came home from his last visit in India in an amazing state. He was enlightened for 6 whole months, and then he spent time with his mother." Jesus himself, the Christian Messiah, when told that his mom and brothers were looking for him while he was preaching, refused to see them and said to the crowd, "These are my mother and brothers, those who do the will of God." Can you just see the 32-year-old man beneath that statement? The well-known prophet, the possible son of God, sighing and face-palming as a nervous disciple tells him, "Hey, buddy, your mom's looking for you." Learning to be in relation to the mother we have now or the mother who has passed away, rather than the mother we had then or then or then, is an important part of who we are as healthy people. We grow and we change. We forgive. We ask for forgiveness. We try to find compassion for ourselves and for our moms. Some of our moms were amazing, and we remember them with joy. We greet them with love. Some of them weren't good at it. Some of them aren't good at it. Some of them were terrible. Some of us were terrible. And now we are the people that we were raised to be. Some of us grew up in healthy relationships. We accepted our parents' worlds and words and values and choices. And we became who they raised us to be. And some of us rejected our mothering and went in absolute other directions. And we also became who they raised us to be. Safe or unsafe, loving or cold, our lives are intimately intertwined with those who mothered us. We are the living arrows they fired. They are the bows which fired us. And we are here. We've made it this far. On this day and every day, we thank those who mothered us, whether they are still with us, gone ahead in the mystery, warm and safe and close by, or dangerous and distant by choice. Good or bad or in between, gorilla or human being, angel or demon. St. Francis said, "Preach always, use words only when necessary." Quaker author Parker Palmer said, "Let our lives speak." We are the servants our mothers preached. You know what? We are beautiful. Happy Mother's Day. And amen.